Welcome to the CERT podcast series, Security for Business Leaders. The CERT program is part of the Software Engineering Institute, a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You can find out more about us at CERT.org. Show notes for today's conversation are available at the podcast website. My name is Julia Allen. I'm a senior researcher at CERT working on security governance and executive outreach. I'm very pleased today to introduce Chris Alberts, a senior researcher in organizational and security risk management. Today we'll be discussing new work in progress, addressing how to ensure mission success in the face of increasing complexity and inherited risk. And Chris will tell us more about those. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks. Great to be here, Julia.
Hey, I'm really happy to have a chance to talk with you about what you're doing. So let's get started. You were responsible for CERT's Information Security Risk Evaluation Method, OCTIV, Operationally Critical Threat Asset and Vulnerability Evaluation. Tell us a little bit about that experience and how it influenced your current thinking.
When I look back at the original ideas behind OCTIV, it was really to help enable people within organizations to perform assessments and to understand the current security posture and how to improve that. I think what we were trying to initially look at was what we call local optimization, which is where you focus on maybe a subset of all your issues, let's say security, in a system or in an organization. Well, as soon as you start partnering with other organizations, your security is only as good as their security. If your partners are not doing the same thing, the overall mission or the overall objectives you're trying to achieve might not be achieved because not of something that you're doing, but something that one of your partners, collaborators, or customers are not taking due care from a security perspective.
So it kind of goes back to this notion of, you're only as secure as your weakest link. So
right.
When you've got these interdependencies, to not take those into account could give you a false sense of security.
Exactly, a false sense of security. And so instead of looking more statically at these assessments, we're looking more dynamically, looking at what are the interrelationships and dependencies and how do they affect one another. We wanted to look at security in the broader business context. And to do that, we had to broaden to look at what are all the factors, or at least as many of the factors as we know about, that affect the ability to achieve the business objectives.
Right. So you're trying to put the security issues in context, because clearly security doesn't stand alone. It supports the business. It factors into the work processes of the business, the information flows of the business. So you're saying, you need to take a broader set of considerations into account.
Yeah, exactly. And then what you can do is once you take a look at this broad picture, now you can start better allocating resources where they're most needed. And so this also starts making the case for security in many instances, because in many organizations neglect security issues because they don't really make the connection back to the business. Now what we can do is show them how neglecting important security issues may affect their ability to do whatever it is they're doing, such as if they're in a hospital, deliver health care to their patients, if they're building software systems, being able to build the systems, things like that.
I know, because we've been arguing for a long time in our security governance work, this whole notion of putting security in context, because if you can't describe it in a way that makes sense to the leaders of the organization in terms that are meaningful to them about the critical success factors for the business, then it's not apparent why they should necessarily invest.
Yeah, what we're really looking at here is developing confidence in your ability to achieve your objectives. And we're focusing mostly at the local level of processes and programs that are distributed across multiple organizations. So an example we've worked with in the security area is incident management. You think about the ability to detect and then respond to incidents. Very often, the people who run the call center operations are different from the people who monitor the networks for an organization, and they're different from people who actually do the response. And in fact, often they're doing this all for, let's say, a government customer. So you have at least four players in this particular situation. And so now what you have is a truly distributed environment that becomes fairly difficult to manage. We were getting some requests from people to say, I'm not really sure that we're going to be able to respond when we have to.
Right, because I really don't have control over that whole process flow or that holds all those roles and responsibilities.
And not only that, I'm getting all these different status reports, but I can't make any sense out of them because I really don't know how what one contractor is telling me relates to what another contractor is telling me. I don't have the big picture view. And so that's what we're trying to put together is in this ability to assure mission success, because what we're trying to do is give that manager or a group of managers some sense of confidence that they'll be able to do what they intend to do.
Is there a particular way that that confidence can be expressed so that they can really understand what their exposure is?
Yeah. Normally most managers understand at least the dimensions of success that they're looking for. In incident management, there's a quality of response. Are you doing the right things?
Right.
What's the impact on your constituency? So they kind of have those dimensions understood.
Right. In other words, I will know what good incident management is when I see it because I have the kind of this innate sense of what an acceptable level of performance is.
Right. And so we start there, and what we have is a systematic way of breaking down those objectives, as we call them, or dimensions of success, and looking at what is the best case scenario, what's the worst case scenario for each of the objectives, and what are some scenarios in between. So what we start doing is having them think about what is good performance, what's bad performance, what's acceptable and what's not. So let's take the case of where we do five scenarios from best case to worst case. How many of those in-between scenarios are actually acceptable performance and how many are not?
So does this equate back to kind of notions of risk tolerance or risk threshold, this notion of acceptable and unacceptable?
We're looking more at the aggregate. We're not looking at individual risks. We may look at causal chains that create the outcome, but we're really looking at what is the most likely or expected outcome, and also what are the range of outcomes that you can expect based on various conditions that you might encounter as you're trying to achieve your objectives. And so by doing that, then we can look at where your likely outcome is in relation to where you want to be. And then now that gives us our gap that we can now start to look at improvement.
Okay. Also, I've noticed in looking over some of your work, you describe this concept of inherited risk. Can you say a little bit about that? Because I think that's kind of a novel way to think about risk dimensions that maybe business leaders haven't considered before.
Yeah, that gets back to the notion that we're not working in isolation. We talked about incident management and working multiple contractors to manage incidents. And so the idea of inherited risk is that it gets back to the idea of local optimization that I talked about a little bit earlier. At some point, you can improve your operations as much as you can, depending on what your relationships, what your interfaces are with your partners and collaborators. Their actions are influencing your risk. So you're inheriting some amount of risk from what they are or are not doing.
So sometimes we talk about this notion of upstream and downstream, you know, like in the supply chain. You've got providers giving you goods and services and information, and then similarly you're turning around and providing that to somebody else. So I assume you can inherit risk from your upstream, but you can also pass on risk to your downstream.
And we call that imposed risk. So you inherit and impose risk. And so each link in the chain is receiving risk from upstream and giving risk from downstream. And as you look at any process, the risk is either amplified or dampened as it moves from point to point, because you can compensate for some amount of risk that you inherit and maybe actually reduce it or dampen it. On the other hand, your local practices may actually amplify that
risk.
Right,
they actually make it worse.
Make it worse. And so what happens is, as you start looking at as risk flows through the process, you can now start looking at how it's either amplified or dampened. And if you have successive amplifications, it can start getting out of control. And that's when you get into a lot of problems with a lot of these distributed processes and programs because there are no controls for the risk that is inherited and imposed throughout the chain.
So let's try and get, if we can, a little more tangible and maybe get into some arenas where you can actually say, okay, so you've got this incredibly complex arena that you're operating in and probably getting more complex every day, so what can business leaders really do? So let's stay with your incident management example. And could you describe, you know, kind of in fairly simple terms, how the methods that you're developing might help an organization who has upstream risk, has inherited risk, has the potential for imposed risk, and how they could use your methods to actually gain higher confidence that their incident management process is robust?
One of the things that we assume, and it's a very safe assumption, is that people are doing some things in terms of their management of their process, management of their risk, being able to resolve and manage problems, and Managing the actual product or service that they're providing as well. So they're doing things, but they're often disjoint.
Right, and it may be stovepiped.
And stovepiped. And so what we're doing is we're actually creating a suite of tools that we're putting under the banner of what we call SEI Mosaic, and that stands for Mission-Oriented Structured Analysis and Improvement Criteria. And that kind of takes and forces to come up with an integrated view of the objectives you're trying to achieve, and then look at how what you're doing from a process perspective, a product or service perspective, a risk and a problem management perspective, how all those various things that you're doing affect the eventual outcome that you're trying to achieve. In the area of incident management, what we do is take what you have, current knowledge of the process, your current risks that you've identified, all kinds of documentation about what you're trying to achieve.
Right, maybe some of the roles and responsibilities that players in the process currently have.
And we take all that information, talk to people about what's actually going on in these processes, and look at the deviation from what's documented versus what people are actually doing, and then put this big picture view together that says, here's where you are in relation to where you want to be. So in terms of the incident management example I talked about before, we'll look at what the call center's doing, what their practices are, look at the documentation, see what their risks are, and we'll do that for each of the players involved, so the people doing the monitoring of the networks, the people who actually do the response, the people from the customer side. And so now what we can start doing is putting together that big picture of how do all these different parts play together.
So in the case of your methods of the mosaic approach or the tools that you have within that tool suite, how would you help an organization solve that particular problem?
We've designed something we're calling the Mission Diagnostic Protocol. I often refer to it as just the Mission Diagnostic. That's really a kind of a set of roughly 10 indicators that we tailor to any specific situation that we're looking at. So it's not always the same 10 indicators. If you're looking at security incident management, that's different than if you're looking at investing in technology, for instance.
So in the case of incident management, what might be an example of an indicator, just so I can better understand what those are?
We would be looking there at indicators related to how the process is working. So we would look at things like, is there a design for the process? And are risks being managed? Are stakeholder pressures affecting the way that you're doing your work? Another one might be, is your mission explicitly defined? So by a number of simple questions, you can kind of get a gauge for the general health of what you're doing. So you can determine whether you're reasonably good, very good, or poor.
So that helps focus where the attention needs to be applied for improvement.
You can start looking for gaps at the local level. And then you also, if you look at this across the whole end-to-end process, you can look at the things that you might not see at the local level that kind of become apparent at the end-to-end process. I'll give you an example of that. In one of our pilots, the different groups were actually working towards objectives that were actually running counter to each other.
And so they were kind of at cross purposes and probably didn't even realize it.
Exactly.
Right?
And so it wasn't until we looked at the end-to-end process that particular issue came up. And if that didn't get fixed, there was no hope for them to actually work together and actually achieve the mission, because they were kind of working at these cross purposes that affected their ability to achieve their mission.
So it sounds like you'd want to take a look at this assuring mission success approach and maybe even use it, you know, while you're considering a new project or a new initiative or a new process, to help you construct that approach with the potential for higher confidence in the outcome. Is that reasonable?
Exactly. It's a lifecycle approach that you can start at the very beginning when you're first making choices about what's our mission, what kind of staffing are we going to need. A lot of the risk, whether it's a development project or an operational process like incident management, is that a lot of the decisions that were made early in the lifecycle regarding scope of the work that they're doing, how much funding
requirements,
and all that affects what happens in the field. And then once you get to the field, it's very hard to go back and change those things. And the other thing, we have other more sophisticated tools that actually kind of build into current process management techniques, such as workflow diagramming. And we have a way of taking a technique called MAP, which is Mission Assurance Analysis Protocol, which actually takes a workflow and where we can actually create a risk causal chain to look how risk flows from the beginning to the end of the process.
At each step and where, you know, where risk is maybe being created at one step and being handed off to the next.
Exactly. The indicator look gives you a broad brush look and some general indications of where your troubles are. I kind of liken our approach to the healthcare. The general physician says, we know you have some problems in these areas. You need to go to a specialist. That's mission diagnostic. MAP is more of the specialist, where you take that real detailed look to say, here's exactly where your problems are.
Oh, that's a good analogy. So closing up on our conversation, I just have a couple of remaining questions. What role in the organization is in the best position to make use of the methods that you've described? You know, is it a chief risk officer? Is it a program manager? What have you found so far in your pilot work to people that are in the best position to try and embrace some of these approaches and get them into their business processes?
We've been focusing on the management of processes or programs. In terms of the incident management example I gave earlier, the government organization that owned that mission, they're the ones that were responsible for it being done ultimately. Okay. That's who we normally go to because they have the contractual oversight of all the different people that come together to do this. And they're working on behalf of a set of constituents that are relying on these services. So it's really the people ultimately who oversee these complex missions is who we're mostly targeting.
Right. It sounds like also it's the people who have the purse strings, or at least have the ability to authorize spending for the project, and therefore want to make sure their money's well spent to ensure a successful outcome.
Right. And it also, as all improvement. Excuse me, as all improvement projects require sponsorship at the senior level, because a lot of times to get the approval for these kinds of expenditures requires approval several levels up in an organization's hierarchy.
Just in closing then, can you say a little bit about the current state of your work and where we can find out more about it?
Sure. The current state of the work is we've been piloting these various techniques I've talked about. In the field, we're publishing some technical report highlighting some of the things that we've done. We have a new web page up on the Software Engineering Institute's website where people can come for more information as well.
Great, Chris. Well, I think this will bear some very beneficial fruit to organizations that find themselves operating in this highly complex environment that you've described, and hopefully will take full advantage of the experiences and the tools and the methods that your team is developing. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Julia.